It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And if you recently watched this scene on TV, well, then you know what happens next.
Howard, you need to leave.
Who are you?
Me? Nobody. I just need to talk to my lawyers.
Oh, is that right? You want some advice? Find better lawyers.
Howard, please just turn around.
No. Take your time. Yeah.
That clip is from the mid-season finale of Better Call Saul's sixth and final season on AMC. Critically acclaimed and Emmy-nominated, is this show one of those they'll still be watching decades from now? So what is must-see TV today, with too many streaming subscriptions to keep track of? And is there a way to game streaming services so that you can see it all? 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation this hour. Email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest is Robert Thompson. He teaches mass communications and media studies at Syracuse University. He is the founding director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture. Bob, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with Better Call Saul on AMC. Now, this was a prequel to the AMC hit Breaking Bad, so it already had enough momentum and notoriety to sort of carry itself. And I feel like the tempo, the rhythm of six seasons of a rather slow episodic serial has really hit different than most television for some reason. How do you find this final season of Better Call Saul?
It is. Well, where does one start with this? I mean, first of all, I guess I'll start out saying I think this is among the finest television programs ever produced in this country since TV started back in the late 1940s. I remember, and Breaking Bad is on that list as well. And I remember when I heard they were going to do a spinoff of Breaking Bad, and of all people, it was going to be about Saul Goodman. I thought, okay, this is going to be
horrible. Yeah.
And I have to say, by season two, I was grudgingly starting to admit that not only was it up to the standard of the mothership, but it had promise of exceeding it. But so how do, you know, listeners that may not have seen this yet, this is a challenging, it's not like just saying, I love that show, Better Things, go watch it. To really appreciate Better Call Saul, you've got to start at the beginning and watch Breaking Bad.
Which is the end.
Right, which is a disturbing show, but it's fun. You'll have fun with that. But then you're going to get to Better Call Saul, and you already brought this up. It is not the same as Breaking Bad. It's a challenging show. I have to say that I'd go so far as to say it's not all that much fun to watch. I remember when I first read James Joyce's Ulysses, was blown away by how wonderful it was, but I would never call reading that book fun.
That is a great comparison, Bob Thompson, comparing the book Ulysses to Better Call Saul. And is it because it had the momentum from Breaking Bad that had an audience built in, that it didn't have to try to cater, it didn't have to win anybody over, it could slowly, methodically build this story over six seasons until we can't wait until the next Monday night to find out what happens next?
Right. That's part of it, is exactly. They could do that because they'd already laid so much ground. But also, you know, this is a cable show. A lot of people will ultimately watch it on streaming. And they're just doing what they want to do. You know, in the network days, you had to get 25 million people to watch you or you got canceled. You're not going to get 25 million people to tune into a show as complex as Better Call Saul. There just aren't that many people who would stand for it. But AMC is able to put these things on. They're able to kind of let the artists do what they want. That show, I think, moves at a pace and does things is some in service of the people who have been there since Better Call Saul, but some in spite of the viewers. They're clearly artists who are doing what they want to do and definitely not catering oftentimes to the fans.
Bob Thompson, the Emmy nominations announced last week, and for the first time, Rhea Seehorn, who plays Kim Wexler in Better Call Saul, received a nomination. I don't think of Bob Odenkirk necessarily as an incredible actor, but what has Rhea Seehorn done to this series in a way that I don't think anybody expected?
I agree, and didn't she get nominated in Best Supporting?
Ah, yes.
which I don't get that. I mean,
she's a lead.
That she's pretty much a lead actor. Show, but anyway, far be it from me to figure out the category descriptions of. I don't know why it's taken her so long to get this nomination. She has done things with that character, and I cannot imagine that show without her in that character. I would pretty much call her the star of the in many ways. And there are scenes where she just chews up the scenery. So we'll have to see whether she gets it or not, but she certainly deserves the nomination, as do everybody in that category and many other categories.
Well, it speaks volumes that everybody's wondering what's going to happen to Kim Wexler in this series when the show is called Better Call Saul. What's going to become
right,
of
yeah,
Kim? We're talking about this year's best television with Bob Thompson. He's written several books about TV. He is the founding director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture. And we can talk all hour, but we'd invite you to join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Another one of those long-coming Emmy nominations would have to go to Jean Smart, getting praise for her portrayal of an aging stand-up comedian, Deborah Vance, in the HBO show Hacks. Let's listen to her here as she talks about her act with younger writing partner played by Hannah Einbender.
I need to make more fun of myself.
Okay, but the whole point was to stop making yourself the butt of the joke.
No, but I was never the butt of the joke. It was a caricature of myself that was.
Yeah, but you shouldn't be the punching bag. I mean, you were mistreated.
No, I know I've still got plenty of that stuff. No, but listen, I have to admit what I did wrong too. You said it yourself. I am a bully who's been thinking of myself as a victim. I mean, people like me because I take everyone down, right? Well, I need to take myself down too. In a real way. Right. Right.
Bob, what do you make of Hacks? For me, it's just a lot of fun to see what is clearly writers writing about themselves writing.
Yeah, it is. And I like those kind of inside stories things. Not everybody does, but she is just fun to watch. The show could be about, a shrimp boat to watch her. She carries with, she's had some really interesting roles throughout her career. Of course, most people, I think, probably first got to know her on Designing Women back in the day. It was an 80s CBS sitcom. But she's got stuff from, Mayor of Easttown to the Brady Bunch movie and a lot of kind of things in between. And this role seems to be the one she was born to play. She's just perfect for it. And the whole generational thing rings very true as well. And that's easier, or that's harder to do than it seems. We have a lot of those generational comedies and so forth that maybe get one of the generations right, but not the other.
Just to be in a room with a bunch of comedians is always a good time. And that feels like that's pretty much what Hacks does for you every episode, is it puts you in a room with comedians.
Yeah, it does. I agree. That does give you that feel.
Another return would be Henry Winkler, the Fonz from Happy Days, Emmy nominated for his work in HBO's Barry, about a hitman who takes up acting. Interesting here about the new seasons of Barry from a Saturday Night Live alum, and the new season of Ted Lasso, another Saturday Night Live alum, who seemed to have somewhat pivoted away from the comedy or satire into some real serious themes in the latest seasons of these shows.
Yeah, well, let's start with Barry. And isn't Henry Winkler's career an interesting one?
Yes.
He gets totally typecast from being the Fonz on Happy Days, that he pretty much goes into directing and behind the camera stuff. And then at this point, many, many decades later, he has in fact exceeded his role, I think, already from being the Fonz. You know, Henry Winkler once came to talk at when I was in graduate school at Northwestern, and I got the assignment to pick him up. And he was still on the late days of being Fonzie, so he was a huge, huge star. And I can't believe I was allowed to do this, but I picked him up in my own car, which was a 1971 Ford Pinto. That's my Henry Winkler story. But getting back to Barry. Another one of these just extraordinary shows. And this isn't the commitment of watching 65 episodes of Breaking Bad and 66 of Better Call Saul. Barry is short seasons. There aren't that many, and they're not very long. But there are moments in that show that are some of the freakiest, trippiest things ever seen on a television screen, or any screen for that matter. And it's almost impossible to describe that show. You can say what it's about and all of the rest of it, but it's fun to just dive into that and wallow around for it.
Bob Thompson's the author of several books about TV, and he joins us to take a look at the best that's going on right now and what some consider a golden age. What are you watching? What would you recommend? How are you streaming your shows these days? At 1-800-642-1234. TV, I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and full disclosure, while I enjoyed the TV show Stranger Things on Netflix, I stopped watching after its first season, but the show's new fourth season has gained a lot of attention.
Imagine, if you will, the barrier between our worlds is a concrete dam. Henry is putting cracks in this dam. Cracks in dams create pressure. Left unchecked, the pressure will build and build, and eventually it will reach a breaking point, and the dam will burst.
With 13 Emmy nominations this year, the next and fifth season of Stranger Things is expected to be its last, although Netflix is reportedly planning on spin-offs. Is it worth going back to watch? And if not, which TV shows do you think deserve to be seen from the pilot episode all the way to the series finale? Join us, 1-800-642-1234. Our guest is Bob Thompson from Syracuse University, and he stays with us. And Bob, did I make a mistake in dropping Stranger Things now with its fourth season out? Should I go back and rewatch?
No, well, you probably. It was an important show, and you seemed to stop watching when everybody else was starting.
Yes.
Because Netflix brags, and of course Netflix gives us whatever numbers they want, but they claim that this was the first English language show, it had happened before with Squid Game, to get over 1 billion hours of views. And if you watch this last part of this last season, the episodes seemed like they were about 1 billion hours long.
Oh my gosh, that season.
The last one was an hour and a half, and the last one was 2.5 hours.
That's longer than feature films are these days.
Yeah, it's like, right, it's like a Scorsese film. But so anyway, they really are kind of morphing into, you know, something different than what we think of as a regular TV series. I see what may have happened as you were watching. You've only got so much time to watch so much TV.
Right.
Stranger Things first season was a lot of fun. And I got a sense too, as it continued, that, you know, this might be one I can afford not to look at every episode of. This past season, though, was interesting in a lot of ways. And if nothing else, they really do a nice job of just caressing the 1980s.
Ah, yeah, yeah, it is a throwback. I do appreciate that. But I do have to ask you, Bob Thompson, how do you afford all your subscription services to see all your television shows?
Well, it's a job expense.
It's a write-off. But,
you know, in the old days, you know, when I would say, oh, I've got to go home and, you know, watch all this stuff, it was like, oh, boo-hoo, you've got to watch TV.
Right.
But I have to say, these last couple of years, it really is getting to be hard work. I mean, you can't possibly keep up with everything, which I used to do.
Well, Bob, I know some podcast fans that will listen to everything at twice the speed, and that might be something you would consider with your TV shows going forward.
I'm not going to confess that out loud, but I am aware of that strategy.
Okay. So what are the other strategies? I think about my mom's got a Paramount streaming services. I've got a friend who lets me use their Peacock for Below Deck. My subscription strategy these days has been sharing, communal. Let's see how many people we can get on a single account and all go in on it. And let's see how many accounts we can get like that. In order to see the best TV these days, it seems like you'd need any number of subscriptions. Do you, from your perspective, have a strategy that we can use effectively?
Well, I mean, short of using other people's codes or just downright pirating stuff, which places like Netflix are really, really trying to figure out how to make that stop, because they can't keep growing forever. There's only so many human beings on the planet. And it is rough. I mean, I'm just looking at the Emmy nominations for drama and comedy. To watch all of them that were nominated, you would need Showtime, Netflix, HBO, Apple TV Plus. You'd need a cable subscription to get AMC. You'd need HBO Max, Amazon Prime, Hulu, and FX. That's just the best comedies and dramas. You would need all of those different services. That's a lot of, and that begins to add up to a lot of money. It starts approaching what a cable bill to be. That's the bad news. This really has become the best programming really require you to have enough income to afford it. Television used to be free once you paid for a television set. However, back when it was free, when I was growing up, our choices were, you know, about flying nuns and talking horses.
You had three choices. There were three choices, and that is hard to even fathom these days.
It is, but I think there is a concern that this really becomes there is an elitist factor. This is very elite-like television, and there are lots of people out there who would like to watch this programming, I'm sure, who can't afford it.
We're talking about the year's television with Bob Thompson, who teaches mass communications and media studies at Syracuse University, the founding director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. And maybe you'd call this a surprise hit of the summer. I'm not sure, but we do have millions of people tuning in to the January 6th hearings, even in the middle of the day. Let's hear from Cassidy Hutchinson, an aide to former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, who was testifying just last month.
I first noticed there was ketchup dripping down the wall, and there's a shattered porcelain plate on the floor. The valet had articulated that the president was extremely angry at the attorney general's AP interview and had thrown his lunch against the wall.
Bob, you are an expert in television, and these January 6th hearings seem to have been produced for television.
Yeah, I mean, I've already seen that scene in an episode of Real Housewives of New Jersey several years ago, the upset plates and all of that kind of thing. This was, and I think you accurately described it, it was a summer series, and we're about to get what might be the series finale, although that could change.
Mid-season finale, I believe, is tomorrow night's primetime. Hearing.
Right, and it's episode 8. That's about the size of these episodes, or this number of episodes that we normally get. And you're also right. We have had television hits out of hearings before. The Army McCarthy hearings back in the 50s. Certainly the Watergate. Everybody talks about those. Did very well in some of the places that aired them. But I have never seen hearings so carefully produced, so carefully turned into television programs, to the extent that a few were delayed because they didn't meet their production schedule. We start in primetime with episode 1. We're ending tomorrow night in primetime again with the final episode. And have you noticed how at the end of each episode, they drop a little cliffhanger, including that whopper that we heard after the 7th?
Potential witness tampering seemed to be the lead into the next episode. If
you might as well say coming next week on.
But it's been compelling, right? I mean, it's outrated some of our big live sporting events, nationwide sporting events. We'll see how it compares to the baseball All-Star game coming up here. And I should mention, for the record, we will be carrying the audio if you'd like to listen to those hearings live tomorrow night here on the Ideas Network. But they certainly, as I understand it, I do believe a former TV executive was one of those who was brought in to help execute these hearings.
You are correct.
Mm-hmm. So, what does this mean for TV, Bob Thompson, especially since we've been talking about streaming and terrestrial?
Well, you mean what, to the January 6th? Mm-hmm.
Are we going to see more of this? Is this a new series that we'd expect from Washington, D.C. regularly?
Well, I'm not sure we're going to. I mean, we've had this, entire channels of this for a long time. Oh, called C-SPAN. The opposite when it comes to production. C-SPAN turns on a light, turns on a camera, and there it goes. However, I think certainly whenever big things like this come up, I mean, an awful lot of the grinding of government at a local, state, and federal level doesn't make what you would call generally good television. But when these kinds of things, just like when big court cases come up, if cameras are allowed, we're going to see them. And I do think that what January 6th investigation hearings have taught people who work in the medium is that you can actually produce these. You don't just have to, you know, open up the cameras. And I think it's actually quite a long time it took. You know, how many years have we had PowerPoint and multimedia presentations and all of that kind of thing? You could argue that the average, you know, accountant giving her, you know, annual report at the firm does a better video. And
Bob, we got to take a break here real quick. It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And do you recognize the name Heli R?
I understand that you're unhappy with the life that you've been given. But you know what? Eventually we all have to accept reality. So here it is. I am a person. You are not. I make the decisions. You do not. And if you ever do anything to my fingers, know that I will keep you alive long enough to horribly regret that.
That is from the mind-bending first season of the show Severance, streaming on Apple TV Plus and receiving 14 Emmy nominations this year. Did you watch it? What about the rest of the Apple TV Plus's lineup? Is it all worth the price of a subscription? Join in, 1-800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Our conversation continues with Bob Thompson from Syracuse University. Bob, you talked earlier about how Better Call Saul may be something we will still be talking about from television 20 years down the road. You see the same with Severance?
Well, it's certainly getting a lot of attention, isn't it? Mm. And it plays pretty good as radio, too.
Yeah, that was scary.
Based on that clip, yeah. I'm not sure. It got, 14 nominations, I think, including Best Drama. So that's a lot. Critics have really liked it. I personally wouldn't put it in that top of the pyramid of television of all time. But, you know, it's hard to tell. It's only been one season. I'm not sure I realized how great The Wire was until that show had been on for a little while.
Well, it's one of those first seasons where you're like, don't screw this up on the second season. I'm too invested in this now for you to have a sophomore slump.
Yeah, I have that same feeling. Matter of fact, there are a lot of shows out there, I think, that if they could have just been allowed to stop, especially some of these shows based on novels, and they get good ratings, good response, so they give them to another season, and then they have to go beyond the novel. It would be like if Beethoven had, performed the Fifth Symphony or conducted the Fifth Symphony, if he were doing that today in the era of streaming, the executive at Netflix would have said, that was spectacular. We really loved it. The critics loved it. Can you give us another movement? And I guess maybe that would have been good, but it was kind of finished. And I feel that way about a number of shows that really were wonderful as 8 episodes or 13 episodes, 9 episodes. And then they just have to keep going because the equity has been built up. You might as well move into the house.
What about some of those short run series? And as long as we're on Apple TV, I'll bring up the We Crash, which was a TV short run TV series about the WeWork company and its leader, Adam Neumann. But that was one of a slew of those sort of short run shows about real recent stories. The Dropout, featuring Amanda Seyfried as Elizabeth Holmes in the company Theranos. And then there was Super Pumped with Joseph Gordon-Levitt playing Travis Kalanick in a series about Uber. And I think that one was on Showtime and The Dropout was on Hulu. Those are some short run stories about recent news events. And yet some of those were compelling. At least I thought so.
They were. I think some of those that you mentioned, matter of fact, all those you mentioned were interesting in one way or another. And of course, that's nothing new. They started out usually as the made-for-TV movies called, which would be based on relatively new news events. They did two on O.J. Simpson long before the really good ones that came many, many years later. Even Brian's song, when you think 71, late James Caan started. Right. Game. That was based on a real set of events. So that's how that used to be done. And then we moved to the miniseries, The Executioner's Song, In Cold Blood, those kinds of things, which would deal with real things that had happened in longer forms. And in many ways, these short form things that play in and out and they're finished, are really very much in that 70s tradition. They're just, they have bigger budgets, they're better written, and they got bigger actors starring.
Well, it was the actors that stood out for me in these short-run series about these Silicon Valley companies. It was Amanda Seyfried's performance and Jared Leto's accent and Joseph Gordon-Levitt finding a way to be, completely unempathetic at all times.
Yeah,
those performances, I thought, were what carried those, at least what I saw from those shows.
And isn't it interesting how, there is no distinction. No actor turns their nose up at television.
Right. That didn't used to be the case at all, right? That's where you fell out the bottom of the entertainment industry back when there was only three major networks.
Right. Your trajectory was you started in television, you beat it out of that neighborhood as soon as you could and got into films. And then as your career declined, you'd go back to television and you'd do a guest star in The Love Boat. Or Now, if I were a young actor coming out of school and I was given a choice of a feature film or an HBO Max series, I don't think I'd have to think very long about that. As an actor, as a director, as any person making audiovisual entertainment.
We're talking about television highlights and trends with Bob Thompson, the founding director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University, where he still teaches. And we invite you to join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Another show from the Apple Plus streaming service, For All Mankind. And that sort of brings us to the sci-fi stories that we've seen recently, with like the Umbrella Academy, which just wrapped up their most recent story, and Miss Marvel, which has received some critical acclaim. A lot of sci-fi right now on TV, Bob. What do you see?
Yeah, there is a lot, and a lot of it is good. And it's interesting how until we got to the place where we could get these smaller specialized audiences, sci-fi wasn't really able to thrive. In network television, you had a show like Star Trek, which of course launched this enormous universe, which we were still living in with new things now. That show kind of limped along on NBC for three seasons and ultimately got canceled without much fanfare. There were shows like The Twilight Zone, a few others that played at that point, but it really wasn't until cable broke in, started chopping away at the mandatory size of an audience, before we could even start getting shows like The X-Files and all of those kinds of things. You couldn't get 30 million people to watch that genre. You could get 10 million people to watch it. And I think now we're getting, sci-fi is blending with horror, is blending with social commentary, Lovecraft Country. What do you call that? That's a kind of a genre emerging unto itself.
Right. Yeah, that would be hard to actually peg as any sort of, it's just about almost everything, it feels like, sometimes all at once coming at you.
Hey, you know, we didn't mention with Apple Plus, Pachinko, which I thought was a really beautifully executed show based on a really beautifully executed novel.
I really appreciate that. I have seen that come up a number of times, and give me the gist of it because I'd be interested in jumping in perhaps.
Well, it's a novel about a Korean woman, and it's during the occupation by Japan during the Second World War, and then the aftermath of that. And it really gives some very, very kind of in-depth emotional explorations of what was a very, very complicated set of national circumstances during that period.
Pachinko on Apple TV Plus, something to check out from our guest, Bob Thompson. And Bob, when it comes back, going back from the streaming services to the broadcast networks continue to push reality shows, and we continue to consume them. I understand The Bachelor has just completed its 26th season. 26 seasons of The Bachelor? When do we run out of Bachelors? But I should talk. Because I sit and wait for the next episode of Below Deck like it is my my breakfast. So.
Well, The Bachelor, the first one, debuted 20 years ago. And you're right, it's had more than that number of seasons. And since then, it has had all kinds of spinoffs, The Bachelorette and Bachelor in Paradise and all of these various spinoffs. And, you know, and I teach in a television and film department. So I have serious students, and this summer I'm teaching master's degree students. So you would think they'd all want to be talking about the greatest stuff. And I think the show that has most come up, you know, before and after class that people are talking about is the recent season of The Bachelorette, which, onto your hats, has not one, but two bachelorettes. And it is so funny how after 20 years, that show is still managing to get an awful lot of people to talk about it.
Why?
Two things about that. And I confess, I actually watched that show as well. That's trepidation. But secondly, network television has, I think, figured out that, and they figured that out way back when they saw The Sopranos. So an executive at NBC is, what are we going to do now that there's The Sopranos? And I think they've looked at the landscape, and they've figured out that reality and the rebooting of game shows, some of them 50 years old, is doing quite well for them, with a couple of exceptions, one of which we should talk about.
Bob Thompson, we'll save that exception for the other side of our underwriters. Our guest teaches mass communications and media studies at Syracuse University, and we're going to talk more about this year's best TV and where to find it with your input along the way at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we've been spending this hour taking a look at television in what some consider a golden age, while at the same time it would take all the subscriptions that are available in order to be able to see all the TV shows that are now considered such. Our guest for the hour has been Bob Thompson, who teaches mass communication and media studies at Syracuse University. He stays with us. And Bob, as before we had our break there, you were talking about an exception to the success of reality shows that we've seen on broadcast TV. That exception deserves notice. What is it?
Right. So broadcast TV does seem to do a lot of games, a lot of reality, but they had one nomination in a major category, best comedy, a series that started this past season called Abbott Elementary.
Yes.
For whoever has and most people who discover this really like it, school teaching, it's the most wonderful thing that ever happened. But it's got no swearing, no sex. There's no complicated stories that you need to have a clipboard to keep yourself. It's a very old school, funny comedy, but it's also, I think, very humane and
it's kind. It's kind.
It's
it
kind
has
and
huge
gentle.
Heart.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Quinta Brunson's work here, and I don't know where she came from, and the cast that they've put together has made a sort of feel-good sitcom, I would say, and sort of in the vein of the first season of Ted Lasso or something like that. It just feels good to be a part of it.
It does, and I think that's a good comparison, and I think it's astute that you compared it to the first season of Ted Lasso.
Yes, exactly, because those feelings change. Now, as long as we're on comedies here, Unalaska native Mark Prox stars as a psychic vampire in What We Do in the Shadows, which is Emmy-nominated for Best Comedy Series, along with Abbott Elementary. Now, here's another vampire from the Nandor, who returns for season 4, which is now streaming on Hulu.
My eight prey love journey. Where to begin? As fate would have it, I got as far as Fresno, I think it is called. I met a very plump family on the train from Wisconsin. I planned to drain them, but they were quite endearing. They had a very particular way of speaking. It was like Oh, hey there, Nandor.
You want to come see the Packers spawn the frozen tundra of the Lumber Field?
Something like that.
A spinoff from a movie from Taika Waititi and Jermaine Clemens, and it all seems to go back to Flight of the Conchords TV show from HBO. And yet this little sitcom continues to have legs, even in season four, Bob.
Yeah, it does. One of those things that if you were to go off out on the street right now and ask the 10 people that you see, it's likely that a lot of them would not have ever heard of that, or for that what we do in the shadows, or a lot of the shows that we've talked about. There's a sense now, I think, more than ever, that one needs lines of information to hear about what's on. I mean, back in the day, there were only, at any given time, what, about 70 shows on. By the end of the season, you saw all of them.
Yeah, and so you're right. And I feel the same way about Abbott Elementary. I want to tell everybody about this show. Since it's not streaming and it's available on terrestrial along with streaming, it's available to everybody. And here's another one, Bob, that I want to say just so we can say it, because I don't even think others have heard about it, even though it recently completed its fifth and final season on FX, Better Things with Pamela Adlon. Big fan of hers,
yes,
for a long time, but she got to do her own show here, and she did it in a way that speaks to families across the board. What'd you think?
Oh, I thought you were playing a clip. I was
I don't have a clip.
I sat back to enjoy a scene from Better Things. I thought it was also a humane and, in its own way, kind, although in a much kind of
real
way. If I'm not mistaken, Better Things got a Peabody Award. And that's, you know, that's a pretty, between an Emmy and a Peabody, I think I'd be more honored by the Peabody. And that's another show. It went those five seasons. They're beautifully executed five seasons. And the final episode, I think, was really, really lovely.
One of the shows that's getting a lot of attention right now that I have yet to catch up on, just finished its first season. It's The Bear, featuring a hot Italian beef restaurant in Chicago, actually filmed at a hot Italian beef restaurant in Chicago. And it's about the restaurant business, which for those who have been in it may be a little triggering. It seems tight. It seems intense. And I'm a little reluctant to jump into it for that reason, Bob.
Well, I'm very prejudiced here because I grew up in Chicago, and I still, after having lived in upstate New York for 30 years, I still have dreams, actual dreams about Italian beef. So that show was had a special place in my heart. I'm waiting now for the deep dish pizza version of that series.
Oh my gosh, bring on Lou Malnati's. What do you say?
There you go.
It's getting a lot of attention, but so the shows that we shouldn't miss maybe and should take notice of while they still are here, and The Bear comes across my list. Are there others on yours, Bob?
That's a good candidate. Atlanta just finished its third and delayed season. Can watch that. You can watch the whole thing pretty quickly. I think a true masterpiece in every sense of the word. What is it? I think Reservation Dogs is coming back in August. Get caught up on the first two seasons of that. Another one of those shows that you might not have heard of. Those are among my favorites.
Atlanta and Reservation Dogs. We had Atlanta on our list here on the morning show, and the Reservation Dogs I've seen any number of times. I just need the time to be able to get into it. But looking ahead on the horizon, and it's always something new, always something next when it comes to TV. And one of the things that I'm hearing a lot about is the new Lord of the Rings series that is set for September, Bob.
Right, new Lord of the Rings series, and even before that, what is it, Day After Tomorrow, The Gray Man, $200 million budget that Netflix gave to them. It was released last Friday on limited release in theaters. That's coming to Netflix after only a week. So that's, I think, just Day After Tomorrow. New Pretty Little Liars coming out in end of July, Pretty Little Liars, Original Sin.
That's HBO, and The Gray Man.
Yeah,
Netflix
HBO Max. Yeah, HBO Max.
HBO Max and the Gray Man. That's something that Netflix is counting on to at least start. It sounds like they're trying to start their own franchise, movie franchise, and they're counting on Ryan Gosling to get it started.
They are big time counting on that to the extent that you heard today's news. Great news for Netflix. We only lost 1 million subscribers.
Yes.
We were going to lose 2 million subscribers. Reservation Dogs, August 3rd, the new season starts. And then August 4th, nobody wants to miss that. A new Beavis and Butthead comes out.
I'm sorry? A new Beavis and Butthead? I didn't know they were still making those, Bob.
Mike Judge's Beavis and Butthead. Yeah, they just a movie recently. That those two clowns are back.
I believe
August 12th, A League of Their Own. That could be interesting.
A League of Their Own, is this a remake of the original?
Or a series based on, I
think. Oh, wow. League of Their Own.
Another iteration of Walking Dead mid-August, so impossible to keep up with all this stuff.
Well, and to bring us back full circle, I believe the last episode of Better Call Saul on AMC is scheduled for August 15th. Not that I've got that circle on my calendar or anything, but I am.
But are you like me? You know how I feel about that show. I think it's absolutely brilliant, but I'm actually kind of going to be relieved when it's finally over.
Which would be hard to explain to somebody that hasn't sat through 60-some episodes of Breaking Bad and then turned around and sat through 60-some episodes of Better Call Saul. It's a real commitment to feel what would have to be considered a wait for relief, anticipation of relief at the last episode.
Don't you feel at the end of a production of King Lear?
Yes.
It's beautiful, but enough is enough. Everybody's dead. There is a... this is a great compliment to Better Call Saul, that the emotional commitment is so kind of intense that you almost want the relief that's going to come when you finally break up with
it. Wow. Yes, it is an emotional investment, that television of ours. It is a safe emotional investment, and perhaps that best describes why we continue to find ourselves gravitating towards reality TV like The Bachelorette or Below Deck, and the escapism of things like Stranger Things, all the Umbrella Academy, all the sci-fi that's out there right now, and then the reality as well, the January 6th hearings making a primetime appearance on TV and here on the Ideas Network tomorrow night. Bob Thompson, I want to thank you for letting us troll through it all, find the very best and the very best ways for us to be able to view it. Always a pleasure, sir, and I thank you for your time and wisdom this morning.
Thank you. You know an impressive amount about television.
Oh, and I don't know if that's a compliment. I'm not sure. Bob Thompson teaches mass communication and media studies at Syracuse University, and I do watch a tremendous amount of television. Yes, guilty as charged. He is also the founding director of the Blyer Center for Television and Popular Culture. I want to thank him and thank you for being a part of our morning show this morning. I'm Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Kate Archer-Kenton. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.